It is Black History Month, and we have an appropriate story about a woman with a storied past. A street is named after her in Chicago. There's a 1990 commemorative stamp from the Postal Service. She was a suffragette, a mom to four, and a reporter in the late 1800s who survived death threats to expose a dark chapter in history. Her name is Ida B. Wells, and David Freudberg of the public radio series Humankind has her story.
Ida Barnett Wells was born to enslaved parents on a plantation in Holly Springs, Mississippi in 1862 as the Civil War raged. After emancipation, her mother learned to read by accompanying young Ida to school. Paula Giddings at Smith College wrote the principal biography of Ida B. Wells.
Her father was illiterate, but he would ask her to read the newspaper to him and to his friends. His friends would gather around and ask her to read the newspaper to them.
For Wells, it was an early lesson in the importance of information and the power of the press. Originally employed as a school teacher, she began her journalistic life in her early 20s, writing for African American newspapers. And by age 29, she was part owner of the Memphis Free Speech newspaper, which would reach an audience of Black readers. Here an actor reads from her autobiography.
I had an instinctive feeling that the people who have little or no school training should have something coming into their homes weekly, which dealt with their problems in a simple, helpful way. So I wrote in a plain, common sense way on the things that concerned our people.
But Wells did not shrink from covering the prejudice that hobbled African Americans after the Civil War. Attorney and civil rights activist Brian Stevenson is founder of the Equal Justice Initiative in Montgomery, Alabama.
You know, there were a handful of people who, as a result of education, were capable of seeing and understanding things that a lot of people couldn't see and understand. Ida B. Wells could read anything, and she consumed information from all kinds of sources to gain a perspective on the problem that was much more comprehensive, much more nuanced than a lot of other folks.
And events forced Wells to confront the rampant domestic terrorism against African Americans that would claim thousands of victims starting in the late 19th century.
So if the aha moment for her is when a very good friend of hers by the name of Thomas Moss is lynched in Memphis, Tennessee.
Historian Paula Giddings says the brazen slaying of Thomas Moss in 1892 had a profound impact on the young journalist.
And Thomas Moss is no criminal. He's a virtuous Memphis citizen. He was operating a store called the People's Grocery. By night, by day, he was a postman. And that's how he and Wells met, because he was on her route when she was a newspaper editor. Became very good friends. In fact, she was the godmother for his baby, he and his wife's child, youngest child. And that People's Grocery, which was a symbol of so much that was going on with Blacks and Black economic development in Memphis, Tennessee, was competing with a white store in the area. And the white proprietor took advantage of some racial tension in the area to bring sheriffs to the area.
It was in this atmosphere that a number of racial scuffles took place, erupting into a shootout. Thomas Moss and two men in the People's Grocery were blamed and taken to jail.
Even then, it's assumed that they'll have a trial. They said that they were shooting in self-defense, which they were. But on the night of March 9th, some like 75 masked men, white men, come into the jail, snatch out the three men, Thomas Moss and two of the men working in the grocery, take them out into an abandoned railway yard, and just horribly torture them and kill them.
And this incident, Ida Wells later wrote, changed the whole course of my life. The anti-lynching cause became her personal crusade. And it transformed her into what today we would call an investigative reporter. Wells went on to write a series of impassioned editorials inveighing against the hangings, burnings, and shootings. Brian Stevenson says she demanded accountability for the perpetrators.
She, unlike some emancipated Black folks, decided to speak very critically of what was going on. There were people who encouraged her to be less vocal about it, and she said, I won't. And you have to admire and be incredibly inspired by someone who takes seriously this idea of speaking truth to power. And that's what's unique about Ida B. Wells' writing.
The Afro-American is not a bestial race. If this work can contribute in any way towards proving this, and at the same time arouse the conscience of the American people to a demand for justice to every citizen and punishment by law for the lawless, I shall feel I have done my race a service.
First of all, you know, she's small. She's like about 5 feet tall. She's a tiny woman. And she starts just traveling alone. She's traveling to the sites of lynchings. She's interviewing eyewitnesses. She begins to put together statistics and also use statistics of other organizations, like the Chicago Tribune was actually also looking at lynchings and were publishing statistics. And statistics is a relatively new innovation in this period of time. But she knew that she had to use more than opinion to have actual evidence of what was happening.
She spoke to the abdication of the rule of law, and really tried to compel people to accept and to recognize their responsibility in this crisis. For that, she was obviously targeted and herself the object of a lot of threat and menace.
As soon as she started writing anti-lynching editorials, she says herself in her autobiography that she bought a pistol, thinking that people were going to kill her, try to kill her. And she said, well, if I go, somebody's going to go with me. That was her attitude.
Wells learned tenacity early in life. Both her parents and a younger brother died in a yellow fever epidemic when she was 16. She then assumed the task of raising her 5 remaining siblings and carried that personal strength into her battle against lynching.
There was an editorial that she wrote in May of 1892. Which was published when she wasn't in town. She goes to New York, where she's met by T. Thomas Fortune, who is the leading black newspaperman in the country at this point, with his newspaper out of New York, the New York Age. And she meets him at the train station, and he says, well, we've been trying to get you here for some time, Miss Wells, and now that you're here, you're going to have to stay. And she says, what are you talking about? He says, oh, you haven't heard. Well, they have destroyed in Memphis, after the publication of the editorial, they have destroyed her newspaper office. They have run her business partner out of town. She has heard now that they're also they're waiting for her to come back so that they can lynch her.
Wells considered going back. In many southern towns, local fraternal groups would form militias to look after African-American residents. One in Memphis had sent word that they would protect her.
But she decided, she said, going back would just mean more bloodshed, as she says, and more widows. She said, no, I'm not going to do it. So she's now in exile, and she won't have another trip back to the South in decades.
At one point, following the racial murder of a black postmaster in South Carolina, Wells met with President William McKinley at the White House, along with members of Congress and pastors calling for justice. Ultimately, the lynchers were never punished. But her example of fearless journalism is inspiring to a new generation.
There weren't a lot of templates for what I wanted to do. I didn't grow up seeing any ideas or any examples of black women investigative reporters.
Nicole Hannah-Jones is a correspondent focusing on racial injustice for the New York Times Magazine. She leads the 1619 Project, which recognizes 400 years since slavery was introduced in the Americas. Ever since first learning about Ida B. Wells, Nicole was emboldened.
I think about her a lot, and I really do think she guides my work because she had such a strong sense of what was right and what was wrong. So clearly, that's why my Twitter name is Ida B. Wells, in honor of her.
In our era when investigative journalism is a safeguard of democracy, the unlikely role model of this tiny woman stands tall today. For Here and Now, I'm David Freudberg.